SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We welcome you to hour number two of this Tuesday, live right here on the Early Line. Maybe it's a Tuesday in the calendar, but it's the final day of 2024. New Year's Eve is what we call it, or in other words, a day. Read the shirt once again for college football, period. Yeah, that's right. Five college football games at the FBS level on this final day of 2024. Four in bowl season and our fifth and final to ring in a new year. It's the start of the quarterfinal round of the college football playoff. The Fiesta Bowl tonight out in the desert between the 3-seed Boise State and the 6-seed Penn State. Joe, so much to get to here in this second hour. We set the stage for the final eight teams still in the chase for a national championship in the first ever 12-team college football playoff. We will also talk more about the NFL, getting you ready for week number 18. Golf season starts this Saturday on the PGA Tour. Saturday starts this Thursday on the PGA Tour with the Century Championship out on the Hawaiian Islands. Keith Stewart will be back on the show. So much to get into here in this second hour.
Yeah, a little something for everyone, Ben, as we look to turn the page on 2024. Welcome in 2025. Exciting stuff. And we still have, I mean, what, 4 weeks of college football? 3 weeks? So I'm all for it. Let's go.
We're not done, man. 3 weeks from yesterday is the national championship game. There's a lot of time now in the biggest field and the most teams with the most wins necessary to claim a national championship in college football in the history of this sport. So thus, history continues on this Tuesday night, on New Year's Eve, to ring in 2025 before a triple header of CFP action comes your way tomorrow on New Year's Day. It is New Year's Eve. It is a party. That will be the case out in Glendale, Arizona, for the Fiesta Bowl between Penn State and Boise State. It's the first game of the quarterfinal round. There you see the matchups. It starts with the Fiesta Bowl tonight. Then we go to the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. Arizona State and Texas, our largest spread of the CFP quarterfinal round, and then two heavyweight showdowns to end out New Year's Day. The granddaddy of them all, the rematch between Oregon and Ohio State in a Sugar Bowl in the Big Easy. Would love to visit that city sometime, between Georgia and Notre Dame. What a round we have in this historic bracket, the first ever 12-team college football playoff. Joe, I think the natural question as we look at the bracket, after we saw blowouts in our four opening round games, every game decided by at least two touchdowns. On campus for the first time, where home teams took advantage, home teams booked as a favorite, everybody laying at least a touchdown. In those home favorites were a perfect 4-0 against the spread with an average margin of victory of 19.3 points per game. So again, I think the natural question begs, will the quarterfinal round be closer, including our first two games starting tonight in the Fiesta Bowl?
Unfortunately, they won't. And I think they won't here, Ben, because we've talked about it. I mean, listen, I do think you have 12 teams that deserve to be there, the most deserving. I still would like to get to a situation where we just have the 12 best teams in the country, but that's going to take a little time. And I think that this is where the seeding comes into play, Ben, because much like what we talked about last week in the blowouts and how is Ohio State an 8 seed, and that's what you get Oregon for being the number 1 seed at this point.
Yeah.
I think they will eventually get the seeding correctly. But until then, we've got blowouts ready to go here. I mean, there are levels to this, Ben. We've talked about it, right? The SMUs of the world are not the Penn States of the world. And Boise State, once again, great year, deserving to be here. number three seed, but congratulations. Yeah. Your gift is that you get to take on the number five defense in the nation. And yeah, you're going to get blown out like most teams usually do, who are not of this caliber here. I mean, Penn State's averaging 38 points a game here, Ben. The offense is humming. They're great stacking the box up against the run. I don't think Boise State can compete, but I do think they can score enough to help us get this thing flying over the total at the Fiesta Bowl. Most Fiesta Bowls are usually shootouts. I don't think this one's going to be any different, only I think Penn State will eventually cover this game, but I think we fly over the total as well.
And that's been a big part of it as well, Joe, for a Nittany Lions team. When expected to win a game under James Franklin, they often do, and they are pretty darn good. I caution everybody, please, 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 it's probably not going to work with some of the takes that we will see tonight on social media. But remember how the college football playoff has always played out, even our semifinal games. In the 10-year history of the four-team format of the CFP, were decided on average by 17.9 points per game, with only 7 of the 20 even decided by a single score. Our national championship games in the decade of the CFP, the two best teams in college football squaring off, decided by 21.4 points per game, with half of them decided by at least 3 touchdowns. Blowouts in this unique and wacky sport of college football, even at the upper echelon, have happened, do happen, and will continue to happen. Now, Joe, to your point on fixing the format, we've already been seeing reports, namely from Action Network's Brett McMurphy yesterday, that the College Football Playoff Committee and the College Football Playoff Board of Governors, if you will, is already considering a change to this format for next year, where you would still guarantee bids to the college football playoff for the 5 highest ranked conference champs. So you would have that group of 5 input and making sure you get at least 1 ACC and Big 12 team into this field, but not necessarily opening round buys for the 4 highest ranked conference champs. I think we can all agree that's pretty good. I think some of those teams like Arizona State and Boise State, or maybe even Clemson, whoever earns those automatic bids to the college football playoff, might rather host an on-campus game than play in a bowl game where they're still catching double digits. That would be just my estimation. I do think this quarterfinal round will be closer, and I think we're certainly going to see that in our final 2 games tomorrow night, that being Oregon and Ohio State in the Rose Bowl and Georgia and Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl. Both spreads, 2.5 points in favor of the Buckeyes, 1.5 now only in favor of Georgia. So let's start with the Fiesta Bowl. We'll go game by game. We'll break all of this down where we see things fit throughout our next 3 hours. But Joe, it just should be noted that when you look at these spreads, we've got 2 that are at least double digits, and we've got 2 that is less than a field goal. Boise State is catching 11.5 from Penn State tonight in the Fiesta Bowl out in Glendale, Arizona.
I just think it's a terrible matchup here for Boise State, because the defense of Penn State allowing 279 yards of total offense a game, allowing barely 100 yards per game rushing, which is the strength of Boise State. I think it's simple. Shut down Ashton Jeanty, and guess what? Boise State's going to have a hard time in this game. I think the defensive side of the ball is the big difference maker. Penn State, number 5 offense in the country, and the offense averaging 38 a game here, Ben. They can run, they can throw with efficiency. This game could get out of hand in a hurry. And by the way, Penn State and Franklin will not take their foot off the gas in any way, shape, or form if given the opportunity.
They don't do that, but Boise State is very familiar with this setting out in the desert in Arizona. They have played in 3 previous Fiesta Bowls, including one of the great upsets this sport has ever seen back to start in 2007. More from the College Football Playoff next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Your college football playoff quarterfinal preview live right here on New Year's Eve on the early line on Sports Grid. We start the quarters tonight at the Fiesta Bowl. It's the 3-seed Boise State, the champions of the Mountain West, taking on the 6-seed Penn State. That would be James Franklin's Nittany Lions. Boise has only been an underdog once this year. They were catching three scores inside Autzen Stadium against the Ducks. Of course, they kept that game incredibly close. Oregon needed a last-second field goal to escape with a win. Ashton Gentry, 192 yards on the ground that day against the Ducks. Needs only a buck 32 tonight to break Barry Sanders' record. Now, again, I just have to say this as a student of history of college football. Barry Sanders rushed for 2,628 yards in 11 games in 1988. If you add on even the bowl game for the Pokes, that record is 2,850. So, yeah, Ashton Gentry in his 14th game of the year could catch Barry tonight. But know what the actual record is, not discrediting any Ashton Gentry. He has had a historic season. And more than likely with the second most rushing yards in a single season in the history of college football. Joe, now we go to our next game in the quarterfinal round. It also features double digits. That is Arizona State in the Peach Bowl, the champions of the Big 12, earning that opening round bye, taking on the top at-large team, the runner-ups in the SEC. That would be Texas. Texas was the largest favorite of the opening round, laying two touchdowns at close against Clemson. Texas is the largest favorite in the quarterfinal round, laying 12.5 points against the Sun Devils. Texas covered, winning by 14 against Clemson in the opening round. Might the Longhorns do the same here in the quarterfinal round?
I hate the matchup for Arizona. I think it's just a terrible matchup for the Sun Devils. Now, Clemson, to their credit, Klubnik there, they could throw the ball, and that's how they ended up moving the ball on Texas. Arizona State is all about running it with scatterball. Texas, 10th in the country against the rush, allowing 104.2 rushing yards per game. The 13 teams that the Sun Devils have faced this season have an average total defense of rank of 76. Texas is the third ranked defense in the country overall. And by the way, Jordan Tyson not playing, the number one receiver here for Arizona State, which means how are you beating them? And they can't get pressure on Quinn Ewers. We all saw Quinn Ewers is a different quarterback if you can get into his face. That's not what the Sun Devils defensively do. They rank 100th in the country in sacks per game. Everything here points to this being advantage Texas. If they can't run on this Texas defense, this game is also a blowout, unfortunately.
So Clemson threw for 336 against the Longhorns in Austin in the opening round. Texas entered that game allowing just 146 passing yards per. They were the best secondary in all of college football. I do believe that Arizona State is going to have to run the football effectively. And I think they have the guy in Cam Scataboo who can do exactly that. I also believe they have the head coach in Kenny Dillingham that came to ASU after being the offensive play caller at Oregon that will design a scheme to keep this game close. I do think Arizona State can stay within this number, but that's a big if on Cam Scataboo having the game of his life. He's had 7 of 12 games that he's played in this year for ASU where he has had at least 180 scrimmage yards. He will need that and then some. Against Texas. Arizona State's doing a lot of talking. Don't love that because Texas is sitting there and saying, what a great year for the Sun Devils. We wish them the best. That is what you say before you bludgeon somebody when you know they are better, when you are better than them. I will just say, double-digit spreads in our first two games, less than a field goal in our final two. Oregon and Ohio State in the rematch in the Rose Bowl. Your classic Pac-12 Big Ten matchup in Pasadena under the San Gabriel Mountains. 2.5-point spread in favor of Ohio State. The Sugar Bowl in the nightcap on New Year's Day out in New Orleans. Joe is basically becoming a pick'em before our very eyes. It opened briefly with Notre Dame as a slight favorite. It quickly flipped to Georgia as the favorite. They laid as many as 2.5. You can see it there. It is a pick'em right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Joe, of those two games, the Rose between Oregon and Ohio State, the Sugar between Georgia and Notre Dame, which game is closer and more competitive?
Oh, they're both serious coin flip games, Ben. It's kind of crazy. I do think in both of those games, totals are probably where the value is. Good luck trying to keep the scoring down between Oregon and Ohio State. In fact, I'd even look at the first half over, given the amount of time Oregon's had to prep for this game, and given the way Ohio State came out firing against Tennessee, they're going to need to do that again. Ohio State doesn't want to have to play come from behind like they did in the first game the entire day. I would look at the first half over as well, but to me, ultimately, it's going to come down to the final 2-3 minutes, just like the first one did. Hopefully, there'll be a lot more points, and we have already cashed the over in it. But I do think Notre Dame has a really good chance here of walking away with a victory and possibly playing for a national championship. They're the dog I would look at if they're even considered a dog at this point.
So when you look at those national championship odds, it's a 6-to-1 price on Notre Dame to win that title, improving because it is basically a pick'em. Joe, we have 8 teams left in the hunt for that national championship in the college football playoff. Before we start the quarterfinals tonight, who would you bet on to win a national championship?
I don't mind Notre Dame. I really don't. I think that they're kind of the forgotten ones here. And while everyone loves the SEC and the Big Ten, yeah, I would pay attention to Notre Dame. And I think they should actually roll Georgia, I think, rather easily in this one.
It will be interesting. Gunnar Stockton makes his first career start for Georgia with a rush defense outside of the Texas game that has been as bad as we have seen in Athens in the last 5 years.
Yep.
More on the early line up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
From the college football playoff, now we set the stage once again for week 18. All of the stakes based on the outcomes of our regular season finale weekend within the National Football League. We have talked a lot about that NFC playoff picture, but we go back to it because really it doesn't get better than what we are going to see in this conference decided by the very final regular season game of this season. That is Detroit and Minnesota. Joe, I asked you earlier in the show, if these teams flip-flop, the Lions are a 2.5-point favorite on Sunday night in game 272. But if the Vikings can pull off the upset and they become the one seed in the NFC, in the NFC North champs, and the Lions are now a wild card team that would have to play strictly road games in hopes of reaching an NFC championship or appearing in the first ever Super Bowl in franchise history, would that change your outlook? You said no. Would it change your outlook for Minnesota if the Vikings were the top team and not the top wild card team as the 5 seed?
Yeah, I think the Vikings at home are interesting if they have that. And I also think the bye comes into play here for some of these teams. The Lions, yep, and the sure. Vikings, which team gets a week off to rest, which team has got to go to the grind, but which is what makes that whole 5, 6, and 7 seed and how that finishes extremely interesting. So we all know it's going to be the Lions and the Vikings in that 5th seed, right? So in all likelihood, it's going to be the Bucks or the Rams playing that team. If it's the Lions or if it's the Vikings, I don't think it changes very, very much there. I think the the Eagles, the 2-3 seed, however that may end up, I think that is where some of the value or the upsets could come into play here. Because I don't see the Lions or, quite honestly, even the Vikings being an underdog in the first round if they have to play. If the Vikings finish in the fifth seed, no way are they going to be an underdog having to travel on the road to take on Tampa or the Rams. Don't see it. I think both the Lions and the Vikings will have favorable odds in their favor moving forward.
It is a really compelling point, Joe, because I would agree. For most of this season, it seemed like whatever top wildcard team out of the NFC North finished in the five spot, they would be a road favorite even in that opening round. But there's a lot still to be determined within the NFC playoff picture. Here are our certainties. Philadelphia is the 2 seed in the NFC. The winner of Detroit, Minnesota on Sunday night will be the 1 seed. The loser will be in the 5 spot. Washington in pole position to be the 6 seed, but how much do they want to play on Sunday? They are a 3.5-point favorite on the road in Dallas. That number working up from a flat field goal. I bet it yesterday. I should know. If Washington wins at the Star, they're the 6th seed. If the Commanders lose in the Packers, who are nearly a double-digit favorite against the lifeless Bears at home in Lambeau on Sunday, win, Green Bay is the 6th seed. I think that is very compelling. Why? Because whether it's the Rams or the Buccaneers, and we'll talk about the 3-4 split in a second, I think you would rather be the 6th seed, take it on the 3 seed, than be the 7th seed and have to visit Philadelphia on the road at the Link to start your playoff run.
I agree. Not a great matchup in any way, shape, or form, but I also don't think Washington is going to roll it in there at all. Former defensive coordinator there for Dallas. I doubt very much he's going to want to go back there and lose. And no CD Lamb. We saw no bite left in that Dallas offense. I think the Commanders go out, handle business, lock up that number 6 seed, and the Packers, well, Packers are going to be interesting because it could very well be two outdoor teams going to Philadelphia to battle it out. I think that might be the interesting one to start. Could the Eagles throw up all over themselves at home in the playoffs? Been known to happen.
The Rams have a very long price right now to win the NFC at 10-1. Philadelphia plus 330, second best number. We'll talk about the stakes for the 3-4 split between the Rams and the Buccaneers in just a moment because we are coming up on the commercial break. But let me present you the two spreads for each team's regular season finale in week 18. The Buccaneers are a 14.5-point home favorite against the Saints. Tampa must win the game to win the NFC South. Thus, it is incredibly important. The Rams have already won the NFC West. They will take on the Seahawks. LA is a field goal underdog at home. What it would mean if the odds are correct and what it means for the NFC Championship. Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Let's continue looking at the NFC playoff picture, and we will talk about Game 272 and its impact on the standings and the prices to win a conference championship in just a moment. But one final point, because a lot of seeding at stake on Sunday in the regular season finale weekend for the NFC playoff picture. Again, our certainties. The Eagles are the 2 seed. The winner of Games 272 between the Vikings and the Lions will be the 1 seed in the championship of the NFC North. The loser will be the top wild card team in that 5 spot. If the Commanders win on Sunday, they're the 6th seed. They're a 3.5-point favorite in Dallas. If the Commanders lose to the Cowboys and the Packers take care of business against the Chicago Bears in Lambeau, Green Bay laying 9.5, it would be the Packers in that 6th spot, which is important as well because the 3-4 matchup right now would be the Rams in the Buccaneers, or the 3-4 split, I should say. LA is a 3-point home underdog against Seattle on Sunday. The Rams have already won the NFC West. The Buccaneers are a 14.5-point home favorite against the Saints on Sunday. Tampa needs, must win the NFC South with a victory against the Saints on Sunday. If for some reason New Orleans and Spencer Rattler pull off the outright upset, which would be unheard of, New Orleans would then give a big gift to the Atlanta Falcons, who would have to take care of business against the Carolina Panthers on Sunday, and the Falcons would win the NFC South. So that's what's really compelling, Joe. The Buccaneers need to win this game to win the division and earn that playoff berth. But if they win the game, and they should, as more than a two-touchdown favorite, in the Rams, who have already wrapped up the NFC West, say, all right, we don't really need Matthew Stafford or Puka Nacua or Cooper Kupp out there against the Seahawks, as the odds would indicate, as a field goal underdog at home, the Bucs would vault the Rams in those standings and become the 3 seed based on a better conference win percentage.
Yeah, and history tells us I wouldn't expect a whole lot of the starters for the Rams to play here, right? That's not how McVay rolls here. I don't think he cares one way or another, although he is 11-5 against the number versus Seattle as the Rams head coach, including 10-2 against the number since 2019. So he's certainly, the Rams and McVay have certainly dominated the Seahawks over the years with McVay as the coach. But again, I don't see a whole lot of risks being taken. And we also know for the Bucs, it's one of the worst spots to be in here, Ben, because the numbers are clear as day over the last couple of decades. Teams that head into the final week of the season having to win against the team that has nothing to play for. Yeah, guess what? It's usually the team has nothing to play for is the one that ends up staying within the number and covering the spread. And that is a huge spread right there for the Bucs.
Huge.
And we've seen them lose some games they should have won already this year.
It has dropped back down below 2 touchdowns. It was 13.5 at open, 14.5 now back to 13 and a hook. I will say this, since week 13, we talked about how profitable favorites have been just winning outright, maybe not profitable, but how good they have been winning outright. Favorites of 6 points or more since week 13 are 29-1 straight up. The only outright loser was Indianapolis last Sunday against the New York Giants. So Tampa should win the game. Are they going to cover laying about 2 touchdowns? That remains to be seen. Game 272. Detroit is a 2.5-point favorite against the Minnesota Vikings. Our total stands at 57.5. It would be the highest over-under in the sport since the 2021 NFL season. But Joe, it's not necessarily about how many points we see on Sunday night in the true regular season finale. It's who wins the game outright and thus maybe who covers less than a field goal spread. How do you believe the side will play out? What will the outcome be in the Motor City on Sunday?
Well, I mean, history tells us Jared Goff, when he's played the Vikings as the quarterback for Detroit, he's 7-0 against the number. It's the best mark of any quarterback in the NFC North versus Minnesota in the last 20 years. Not to mention favorites, Ben, you alluded to it, in primetime games this season, 45-12 straight up. And that also includes a 5-0 mark by this Lions team in primetime. Yeah. All signs point this is exactly what the Lions want. They would have it no other way than to play for the top seed at home against Minnesota. If it ain't broke, man, are we fixing it in here? I don't know that that's the best way to approach this game. I really don't.
Yeah, I would agree. 10-5 against the number. That's Detroit this year as a favorite. Last year as a favorite, 11-5 ATS. Under Dan Campbell, now going on 4 full seasons, 48-22 against the number, a 68.6% cover percentage. It is the best in the National Football League. I bet the Lions on Sunday when this line opened up for game 272, laying 2.5. It's still 2.5. It's heavy juice if you want to get under a field goal for Detroit. It's minus 122 by the time we reach Sunday night. Could this be a flat 3? I would not be surprised. Let's flip our attention now to those NFC Championship odds, because a lot will change in terms of the seeding, Joe, based on the results of Sunday, the winner of Sunday night. Champions of the NFC North, home field advantage in that number one overall seed. The Lions will enter week 18 as the favorites within the NFC right now. The Eagles back by over a dollar plus 330. The Vikings, to me, Joe, the most compelling price. For most of this season, I think the overall assessment on Minnesota, what a great story, man. Winning games, maybe they should not. Winning games close. Sam Darnold has been a revelation. But at a certain point, Cinderella's glass slipper will slip back on. It really hasn't been the case, Joe, for Minnesota. They look the part of a true conference title contender. Do you view the Vikings as such?
Yeah, listen, they are quite compelling here, Ben. We keep waiting for the wheels to fall off. Again, this was a team that was slated to win, what, 6.5, I think was their win total? And here they are on the verge of a 15-win season. So one can make the argument that they are playing way above their pay grade at this point, and at some point it will come crashing down. Usually we know that the playoffs is usually when we see teams who have overperformed come back down to reality. But hey, you know, Cinderellas are a real thing, right? Maybe not so much in college basketball, but certainly in the NFL, they could very well represent the NFC in the big game, which is kind of crazy to think since we only expected them to win 6.5 games or less. Kind of crazy.
I do think there is some value for those four-digit prices that you are seeing on the Rams, the Bucks, and the Commanders, at least L.A. and Washington, or L.A. and Tampa, excuse me, with some playoff pedigree, would be hosting a game to start off the postseason. I do believe there is a different tier for the Lions and the Eagles, but again, maybe some value if you can win a game or two in the NFC playoff bracket. Let's look at the AFC quickly. We'll discuss what is at stake for the final weekend on the other side of the break. There's a lot to figure out, but a little bit less at the same time in comparison to the NFC. Our top two seeds are locked. The Chiefs and the Bills. The Ravens are a 17.5-point favorite against the Browns on Saturday. They should win the AFC North. They will be the 3 seed. The Texans are locked in to the 4 seed as well. If, for whatever reason, Baltimore were to be upset by the Browns and the Steelers beat the Bengals at home on Saturday night, Pittsburgh would win the AFC North. That is highly, highly unlikely. But if the Steelers beat the Bengals, they would lock in the 5 seed. The Chargers are locked into a wild card spot. They've earned their playoff berth. We'll talk about what is at stake in the AFC wild card picture on the other side of the break here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line, figuring out the stakes for the AFC playoff picture entering week 18. Again, back to that playoff graphic. The top two seeds locked in. The Chiefs the 1, the Bills the 2. The Ravens a 17.5-point favorite on Saturday afternoon against the Cleveland Browns, who are probably going to trot out Dorian Thompson-Robinson to stay in the hunt for that number one overall pick. The Ravens are a minus 20,000 favorite to win the AFC North. It would be highly unlikely for that not to be the case. The Houston Texans are locked in to the 4 spot. So let's figure out where things stand in the wild card seeds. If the Steelers, who will host the Bengals on Saturday night, it's just a 1.5-point spread in favor of Cincy, albeit on the road in the Steel City. If Pittsburgh wins that game, they are the top wild card team, assuming that before them, the Baltimore Ravens win the AFC North with a beatdown of the Browns. So that would be big for the Chargers, who play on Sunday, currently is a 5.5-point road favorite in Las Vegas. If the Steelers lose, right now they're a slight home underdog against Cincy. The Chargers could move up to the 5 spot. I think the more desirable opening round matchup is a visit to Houston and a potentially 9-8 Texans team, or 10-7 Houston team that has not been playing its best football really all year, but certainly in the last month and a half, than a visit to Baltimore to take on Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. So those are the stakes, Joe, for those top two wild card spots, the 5 and the 6 seeds currently.
Yeah, and will any of it matter, Ben, because the top three seeds in the AFC, it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's going to come down to, are the Chiefs playing the Bills? Are they playing the Ravens? I don't see, unlike the NFC, where we saw some value in that 5, 6, 7 slot there, I don't see any value here with these teams. I think it's ultimately very top heavy in the AFC. The Chiefs, Bills, or the Ravens are going to be representing, and in all likelihood, the Super Bowl champion this year.
And there is still one wild card spot to figure out, but just to echo what Joe said right there, you can look at the AFC championship odds and see exactly that. It is a tier of three. It has been a tier of three. More than likely come the AFC postseason, it will be a tier of three. The Chiefs are the favorites at plus 155. The Bills have the second best number at plus 260, just about a dollar behind. The Ravens half a buck behind Buffalo at plus 310. And then look at the drop-off from the Ravens to the Chargers at 15-1. The Texans will host a game. Their price to win the AFC championship is 21-1. One of those three teams, the odds expect, and I think we expect, Joe, the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Ravens are going to win the AFC championship. But again, back to what is at stake to end out the regular season. One more spot to be earned in terms of that wild card picture within the AFC. The most likely is simply this. The Denver Broncos, minus 650 to earn a playoff spot this weekend. They're an 8.5-point favorite on Sunday at home in Mile High, hosting the Chiefs' backups, excuse me. That would be Carson Wentz and Kansas City. Let's start there. Joe, are the Broncos in danger at all of losing a game against KC's reserves as more than a touchdown favorite at home?
Got to win, right? That's kind of what we get here this time of year. And even against the backups in Kansas City, of course, there's a chance with a rookie quarterback that you don't get the game. And then you really got to have a lot of things, go your way there. However, I do think they had this in the back of their mind. They had two shots to win one game, right? Last week, they couldn't get it done against Cincinnati, almost. But they knew in the back of their head, they had already watched Kansas City beat Pittsburgh on Christmas, clinch that one seed. So they knew in the back of their head, even if we don't win this game, we still have an opportunity against a Mahomes-less Kansas City team. I think they get it done. You want to control your destiny. They're in control of it right now. But it is the NFL, and we know teams who have to win don't often win this time of year.
That is always the case, Joe. The Denver Broncos are the best favorite in the National Football League. They have been booked as a favorite 7 times. They are a perfect 7-0 against the number, covering by an average margin of better than 12 points per game. They have only covered, actually, in all 7 games, they have played a team that is below 500. They have covered in every one of those. As an underdog, against teams above 500, they are 4-5 against the spread. So a slightly different story for Denver. Oh, well, Ben, the Chiefs are 15-1. The Chiefs with Carson Wentz as the starter would probably be a 6-10 football team, a 7-9 football team at this moment. And it's not just Carson Wentz. It's everybody else. Andy Reid has already shared it will be no starters. It will be reserves in large part for KC. The Broncos now a 9.5-point favorite. If for some reason Denver loses, that opens the door for Miami and Cincinnati. The Broncos will already know if the Bengals have any hope because the Bengals play on Saturday night against the Steelers. Cincy is a slight 1.5-point favorite on the road in Pittsburgh. Again, the Steelers more than likely will need that game to lock up the 5 seed and not play the Ravens in the opening round, but rather play the Texans. Still important for both sides. So we shall see. The Dolphins, regardless of the result for Cincinnati, will play in the afternoon window against the New York Jets with a chance to earn that final spot. They would need a Broncos loss, but if the Broncos lose, even if the Bengals win, Miami wins, and they are into the postseason because of a better conference record than that of the Bengals. Miami, as you will see, a 1.5-point road favorite in New York against the Jets. That was a 2.5-point spread just yesterday, Joe.
Yeah, and again, question marks around Tua. Will he go? Won't he go? Who's going to be the quarterback? It's such a tough spot here and a tough team to back in this. And I think we know the Jets aren't going to lay it all out on the line.
That's for sure. PGA Tour season starts Thursday. We're next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We welcome you back to the Early Line Live right here on this Tuesday. It is New Year's Eve. Tomorrow is New Year's Day. A new year in 2025. A new PGA Tour season starts this Thursday off the mainland and on the Hawaiian Islands with the Century. So to help you get ready for a new year in golf and on the PGA Tour, we welcome on Keith Stewart live right here to this Tuesday on the Early Line. A happy new year, Keith. Thank you for joining us to kick off a new PGA Tour campaign.
Ben, Joe, it's great to be with you guys. And of course, Ben, if you see me stealing shirts from Joe's closet, then you know the PGA Tour is in Hawaii and it's time to kick things off. Let's go.
Joe would look great in that Hawaiian shirt. There is no doubt about it. And Keith, you do as well. So it is the Century. They used to start the PGA Tour with the Tournament of Champions. We still will have a bunch of PGA Tour winners from a season ago play out in Maui to begin this week, but also some from the top 50 of the FedEx Cup points list from a year ago. Keith, let's start with the field and who we will see at the Century. What do you make of the crop of golfers that will begin 2025 on the PGA Tour?
Ben, great breakdown. It's 60 guys at a field for $20 million purse, $3.6 million for first, no-cut event, 72 holes. Thursday through Sunday, these guys are going to play the Plantation course, a par 73, almost 7,600 yards, the third longest course on the PGA Tour. And we've been coming here for a long time for the first event of the year. Since 1999, remember Tiger winning here, JT a bunch of times, Jordan Spieth. The favorite and the number one player in the world, Mr. Scotty Scheffler, had a little accident in the kitchen on Christmas Day. Whether it was dinner, whether it was a knife, whether it was the stem from his wine glass, either way, he impaled his right hand and he needed a little surgery. So he's going to be out for about a month. So the top of the betting board is Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, JT, and a couple of others. We have a really, really nice signature field to start the year.
What do we know about the course, Keith, and who does it favor in this heading into this week?
Well, you know what, Joe? Going into 2025, I'm going to give you Keith's keys every week. And the first thing is Bermuda grass putting. These are the third largest greens on tour, 8,200 square feet on average. And I tell you what, they are slopey, Bill Kaur, Ben Crenshaw design from back in 1991, and Ben Crenshaw could putt. He could test the putters. It's Bermuda grass. And because we're out there on the island and we have a lot of trade winds, these greens will be slow and slopey. Three putt avoidance is a big key. Number two, par fours. We get an extra one this week. I mentioned it already. The scorecard's par 73. There's 11 par fours, eight of which are under 425 yards. It's a birdie fest on the par fours. If you can score there, you're going to do well against the field and separate. And the third thing is that, and this is my secret sauce for the week, is that the guys scoring around the greens. I mentioned those short par fours. These guys have a lot of pitches into some of these green complexes. There's a lot of elevation changes. Very, very unique sort of short shots. Two good comp courses here, Augusta National and Riviera, both places where you need your short game. In the last 5 years, the winners have gained more around the greens against the field than they have on approach, and you don't see that a lot, and that's why those are my three keys for this week at Kapalua.
A short price on Xander Schauffele, the favorite to win the century at 5-1, half the other prices for the remainder of the field. But Keith, normally, and in probably every other event he plays in this year, it wouldn't be Schauffele, it would be Scheffler atop the odds board entering an event. You mentioned the injury to Scottie Scheffler on Christmas night, out for the next 3 to 4 weeks. With no Scottie Scheffler in the field at the century, how does it change your approach to the outright betting odds?
Well, it gives us a lot of hope and optimism because we saw what he did at the Hero, and we saw, frankly, what he did all last year with all the wins and the gold medal. So I love the fact that the top of the board, although it has some interesting people, you know, Xander, 7 starts here, 4 top 10s and a win. He's definitely someone to keep your eye on, but he doesn't have the closing power of a Scottie. For me, I'm looking at a guy like Colin Morikawa, plus 1,200. He's been there 5 times, never finished worse than 7th. And the last couple of years, he really should have closed the event. For me, he's one of my early leans on the early line. The second guy, further down the board, I'm loving Adam Scott. Those Australians play really good at Kapalua. We've had 6 Australian winners, all right, in the last 20 years, guys. Adam Scott's had a great year. He was 3rd the last time he teed it up over there at the DP World Tour Championship, right? So for him at plus 4,000, maybe we'll make a little money in this short field.
I like the look, Keith Stewart. It is a great start to this year out on the PGA Tour in 2025. Hope you have a wonderful start to your year in 2025, both betting and ringing in a new year tonight. Keith Stewart, we appreciate the time. Hour number 3 of the Early Line comes up next.